I'm not just any Cardassian. I'm Galdakot, commander of the Second Order. You have 15 seconds to lower your shields or we'll destroy you.
No, wait!
10 seconds.
No, it's not that simple!
7 seconds.
I've already been paid!
4 seconds.
Stop counting! Stop counting!
He's lowering his shields.
I'll await your arrival, Commander.
I think you can handle it from here.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, reporting for duty.
And now, for this week's conundrum...
Dun-dun-dun. Cardassians, are they the perfect mirror for humanity, Cam?
It's a very lengthy title.
We can chop it up in post, right?
Is there like an asterisk after that, where it's like, and everything you want to know about the Cardassians, but we're too afraid to ask?
That is the episode title in its fullness.
Oh, cool.
I like it. Okay. So we're keeping this, loyal listeners. But here, what we want to do is, I was able to read a great article that was posted a few months ago. It was written by one Will Nguyen, or Will Nguyen, however you'd like to pronounce it. Different people pronounce that particular last name differently. It was posted on TrekNews.net, and it was titled A Mirror for Humanity, Why the Cardassians Are Trek's Best Alien Race. I love this article. He was talking about how
it's very in-depth.
Yes, it framed the Cardassians in a tragic narrative, and how they really kind of emulate kind of the worst of humanity, but there are redemptive qualities about them. And this is why maybe they are more interesting than, say, the Klingons, which a lot of people love those Klingons. I know,
right.
Cam, you've had maybe enough of them.
Yeah, maybe we'll get to that a little later, just in comparing the Cardassians to the Klingons,
But what Will's saying throughout this is that, look, we hit so many more notes with the Cardassians than we do with any other species aside from, you know, the humans that are depicted throughout the television series. And I can't really disagree. Like, I agree with so much of what he's saying, and he's articulated it so well, and I just really inspired me, you know, like, this would be a good launching point for us to discuss kind of the Cardassians and... just why I think like they are one of the strongest alien races featured in Star Trek, and I think it's because they aren't kept as those one-note aliens that have maybe just one trait, and that's how they're defined throughout the rest of the franchise.
Right, right.
Cam, I mean, you were first introduced to the Cardassians. It would have been Deep Space Nine, not
yes.
The Next Generation, correct?
Right.
So, because they, of course, made their first appearance in The Wounded in season five of Next Generation.
Right.
And they went on to be pretty much like the main adversarial force, throughout Deep Space Nine. They weren't the Klingons, really, of Deep Space Nine, until, of course, season four, when the Klingons became the Klingons of Deep
Space
Nine.
Right, of course.
But I just find them fascinating. There's so many very strong Next Gen episodes and very strong Deep Space Nine episodes, of course. But, I mean,
Chain of Command.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
I'm not going to deny that.
Come on.
but just your first thoughts, you know, when you're being introduced to the Cardassians in Deep Space Nine. I mean, I'm guessing the Emissary is your first, Emissary. Definitive article
on
that.
In
but,
a weird way, my introduction to the Cardassians was not an episode of Star Trek.
Tell me more.
It was when I went to the Vancouver Star Trek Con in 2010, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'd only watched the original series and a handful of Next Gens. And Von Armstrong was there. And he did play Cardassian.
Right.
And he talked about Cardassian makeup and sort of getting into the psychology of playing a Cardassian. And that was my introduction to hearing about a Cardassian.
Were you at all fascinated with what he was sharing before you'd even watched a Cardassian on screen?
I can't say I got as much out of it as I would now.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to hear him talk about, because they have the at the cons they have the banners up on the wall of you know, each of the actors and them in character.
Yeah.
And the picture they chose was him as a Cardassian that year. So I was able to look at the photo on the wall, which I did recognize from seeing, say, clips or some, you know, just you kind of pick it up over time.
Yeah.
But I was able to look at, you know, the banner and then hear him talk about playing a Cardassian. And that was just very interesting.
Well, I think what I want to know from you, though, is obviously they're introduced early on in your viewing experience for Deep Space Nine. At what point do you realize, because we're having this discussion as if we both agree that Cardassians are among the most interesting race featured or species featured on Star Trek.
Well, I disagree already.
Well, then.
Tribbles.
But at what point did you realize that these were one of the most interesting races? Was there any particular episode, or was it you just gradually realizing that these are not just these one-note antagonists that a lot of these other Trek aliens can be?
I think part of it came from the fact that, you know, over the time of my watching Trek, you're kind of pounded over the head that the Klingons are the greatest villains in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I never felt like that really proved true. I love Star Trek VI as much as the next person. And I like Star Trek III, but I never walked out of those films being like, God, I love the Klingons.
Right.
I feel like the Klingons, most of the things that really add to their richness and value comes from the heroic side through Worf.
Yeah.
Through seeing them through that character and also through, in DS9, through Martok.
Yeah, I think it's Worf and Martok that are really the only two Klingons that I really, really like.
Right, and so you're approaching the things that are interesting about Klingons more from the point of view as allies.
Yeah.
As villains, they never really sucked me in that much.
No. They seem more like kind of the brutish thugs more than like an intelligent, multidimensional alien, you know?
Right, exactly. And so for me, the Cardassians, I mean, as soon as they pop up in DS9, I'm kind of on board with them because I like their look. Visually, they're interesting. They're like lizard men, and I love lizard men.
Is that what your Tinder profile says?
That's exactly what my Tinder profile says. But I just really love that sort of reptilian look to characters. You know, I love the Gorn, it's well known. I love Bossk in Star Wars. And so they have that similar kind of look. So right away you got me on a visual level that the Klingons never did.
Yeah.
But second of all, I love the sort of the coldness to them. And we see Gul Dukat pop up very early. And
First episode.
Yeah, and Gul Dukat is a great presence right off the bat. Something that I don't think the Klingons had for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you have Duras for like two episodes.
Sure. You know, you have Christopher Lloyd in Star Trek III, but again, I never walked out like, oh man, Krug is a badass.
Yeah. Cam, you may disagree with this. I know for a
fact
you
do. Yes, I do.
But I like General Chang a whole lot more than you do, and when it comes to Klingon adversaries, I know you just say, oh, he's a bit of a con ripoff.
Right.
Dude, it's Christopher Plummer reciting Shakespeare. That's all I can say. We both agree his look with the bolted-in eye patch, the little rat's tail at the back, you know, like, I think he works as, like, a great Klingon villain. But when it comes to the rest of the Klingon antagonists, I'm very much like, eh?
Let me just say something about Chang.
Okay.
And this is an issue that kind of sprang for me watching the original movies as a non-fan of the series at that point. I never really thought of Chang as much of a Klingon. Because he doesn't look like a Klingon.
Yeah.
His last name is Chang.
Well,
he was a character that when I watched those films, I was kind of like, it was confusing to me that he was supposed to be a Klingon.
He doesn't seem so Klingon as, say, we're used to with a Duras or a Gowron.
Right.
I'll definitely agree with that.
He doesn't even look like a Klingon from the original series.
Well, that's doesn't matter. I mean,
just saying.
Yeah, but
they could have blended the two. Sure.
I'm past that point. What I think is really important, I'm not going to disagree. Like, he isn't kind of the Klingon that we're used to. But would you say Gorkon is?
Yes.
Well, in the fact that he's honorable, because he doesn't like David Warner, who played a Cardassian, of course. David Warner doesn't seem like a typical Klingon in my
opinion. Not in attitude, but in look.
Yeah, and look,
I'm talking more luck.
Okay, well, Chang's got the ridges. I'm okay with that. Cam, you were defending the look of the Into Darkness Klingons. Now, you know, well, then, Chang's a bridge too far for you.
It all comes home, doesn't it?
Well, here's what I want to
I'm
get
not saying,
to.
I'm not saying he is now, but I'm saying, like, when I originally started watching those films.
Well, look, I think this is actually a good segue into one thing.
Yes.
Chang, to me, he works as a villain. He seems smart.
Yeah.
He seems conniving. He works for me. Here's a quote from director Chip Chalmers, who's directed... episodes that featured, you know, the Cardassians, and he's specifically talking about Next Generation. "We introduced a new enemy that's finally able to speak on the level of Picard. They're not grunting, they're not giggling, they're not mutes or all-knowing entities. Here are the Cardassians who also graduated first in their class, and they're able to carry on highly intelligent conversations with Picard, but they're sinister as hell. It was fun to introduce a whole new alien race." I think that's a very, very key point here, is that you're actually speaking... Picard's challenged. We definitely see that in Chain of Command. You know, it's actually an intelligent, thoughtful alien. And
unlike the Ferengi.
Unlike the Ferengi, yes.
Right.
There's no astro whips involved or anything like that.
Well, maybe behind the scenes.
I think that's on your Tinder profile as well, too.
Also.
But, and that's what I think is key here. I mean, director Chip Chalmers, he does say they're sinister as hell. We do definitely get different notes as we're get more and more Cardassians going. But don't you think that's kind of important, maybe something that we're missing a little bit, aside from the Romulans when it comes to Star Trek aliens? Like,
well, and the article is actually a little dismissive of the Romulans.
Yeah, which I...
And my whole thing is that the Romulans, to me, what makes them interesting is they're kind of cloaked in mystery.
And that's, I think, maybe why the article's a little dismissive, is because we don't learn nearly as much about the Romulans as we do with the Cardassians. I think the Romulans are great, but...
I think they work best when they're kind of this sort of unknown enemy.
Yeah.
Like, we only have hints of what's going on with them.
But it's interesting, we kind of have that with, say, the Jem'Hadar, who I think... they are a little one note, but when we do get to find out more about them, they're still scary as hell. And we don't lose anything like maybe we did with the Klingons. The Klingons just didn't seem scary anymore, did they?
No.
Not intimidating.
There's also the issue of Klingons with the continuity, where the Klingons didn't start as being particularly scary, and they kind of found their footing when they get to the kind of the later, I guess, Star Trek III onwards.
Right.
And then we get to Next Gen, and there's sort of more heroic characters through Worf.
Yeah.
And it threw into DS9 and stuff like that. So it's like, I feel like the period of time where you would hold up the Klingons as being one of the great adversaries of Star Trek, they're all over the map.
No, yeah, and that's absolutely true. But just bringing it back to the Cardassians, and I think this is key here, is that...
they're a very consistent portrayal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And aside from those weird, weird costumes that they were introduced in the episode The Cardassians, those are quite strange, and they obviously didn't work, but the subsequent costumes are pretty cool, in
my
opinion.
They seem inspired by the Borg Queen.
Well, she came later on, so maybe they inspired her.
Right.
But here's the thing. Cardassians don't remain like these one-note sinister aliens. They're still very, intimidating. And the thing is that their society is, and this is what Will is discussing in the article, is that they're very much, framed around, like, authoritarianism. Like, it's all about serving the system to make sure, you know, the Cardassians, they remain beholden to their system. So we have, of course, Central Command, which is the military arm. And then we have the Obsidian Order, which is more of the intelligence espionage sort of arm, where they're almost the checks and balances against each other, which I find very intriguing. And we get a little bit of that with the Romulans and the Tal Shiar, but it's not explored to the degree that that it is with say the Cardassians here.
Right, and you know, when we're watching DS9, like Gul Dukat is really our entry point into the military aspect.
Yeah.
And then Garak is into the Obsidian Order.
And here's the thing, and we explore that in even more detail when we have, you know, O'Brien put on trial.
Right.
Where he's already guilty before the trial starts.
Yes.
And they're like, well, what's the point of it? And his, quote, lawyer explains to him, well, it's to assure people that the system works, you know, like it's reinforcing the power of the system. And, you know, of course, we already know that you are guilty, and so we're just using the system to show that to everybody. So they have show trials, and it is scary. Like, the Cardassians seem scary, but there are a lot of nuances to them. And I think, you know, I posed this question to you earlier. It's like, what made you really think that they are one of the more fascinating races? And for me, go ahead, Cam.
I was going to say, one of the things that really kind of made them, elevated them above awesome villains to, like, great alien race, is the fact of how easily the show is able to make you hate them mm-hmm. and suddenly be rooting for Galdakot.
Oh,
because yes. There is like a, even though they are sort of these gray reptile men, there is a charisma, a fierce intelligence, a badassery to these characters that you can't help but not think are kind of cool.
And
like they have a seductive quality that is absent from, I would say, the Klingons. The Romulans have a bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that seductive quality is key. And the thing mm-hmm. is, like, they're also very, they're nuanced in their individuality as well.
Right.
You know, and we see that with, say, Gul Madred.
Yes.
Who, of course, interrogated Picard in Chain of Commands.
Yes.
He brings his daughter in to watch.
Yeah.
You know, how is it that about reinforcing the authoritarian rule? But here's what really grabbed me is that we're introduced to Cardassian women who, they kind of excel, and this is what Will brings up in his article, is that they're excelling in, you know, science, technology, engineering. That's, and whereas the men who are considered dumber, they go into the military, and that's how it is a nuanced society, and which mm-hmm. I find very fascinating. And of course, you know, we get stuff like O'Brien and the Cardassian scientists, they're antagonistic with each other,
right.
And that's supposed to be their mating ritual. When it comes to Cardassians, no wonder Galdakot thinks that Kira would totally be into him. You know?
You're right, yeah.
Which I just find it kind of fascinating, like how they really kind of show, like, these can be the worst elements of humanity. But here's where I think Will, this is why I appreciate his article so much, is he's articulating something that I didn't necessarily realize. They do have a redemptive arc throughout them.
Right.
And I think the key here is kind of the arcs of both Dukat and Damar.
Mm-hmm.
Cam, you brought up how Dukat, you can be cheering for him. He's encountering his half-Bajoran daughter, and he figures he's going to kill her, but he doesn't.
Right.
You know? And so, like, you can kind of
get, which is very, like, a Searchers moment.
Right.
The John Wayne movie, if you haven't seen it, where he's out searching for his niece, who's been kidnapped by Indians. And you're never quite sure if he's going to find her and kill her or save her.
Yeah. And it's definitely, it sparks him to end up, you know, taking over a Klingon bird of prey and,
right.
like, you know, fighting the Klingons after they've invaded, you know, the Cardassian Union and attacked the Cardassian Union. Fighting him that way, and you're like, wow, he's kind of like this rebel. He's kind of going punk rock now. He has some principles.
Like, you want to like Galdakot.
Yes, you to like Galdakot.
He does, but it's a real credit to Mark Alimo.
Oh.
Who I think is maybe the great underrated performer in all of Star Trek. Maybe that sounds hyperbolic to say, but at this point in time, I'd be hard pressed to name someone else who, I mean, when I look at the great villains of screen,
yeah,
of the silver screen or of TV, whatever, I mean, he is up there. Galdakot is a fascinating villain.
And do you think that we would have seen the Cardassians as much if Mark Alamo had not been cast as Galdakot? He wasn't actually the original Galdakot. Like,
right.
it was a different actor. He wasn't working, so they went and cast Mark Alamo, who originally played Gul Maset, I think was his name.
I believe so.
But in the first episode, the Cardassians, you know?
Yeah.
So I just don't know if we would have seen all this from the Cardassians without Galdakot, or without Mark Alamo in that role. But let's look at an episode like Duet, where we have, you know, a character like that, who, he's not just this evil, sinister dude who liked killing Bajorans. He's a tortured clerk who feels immense guilt over, you know, his participation in what happened during the occupation.
Yeah, and if you don't remember, this is the DS9 episode from season one where Kira basically encounters this man and has to kind of have this sort of back and forth battle deciding her feelings on him and what role he actually served in the occupation.
And that definitely comes back to that redemptive arc, you
right.
know, that the Cardassians are capable of. I mean, would you really consider the Klingon characters that we know and love, they're really on this redemptive arc? Maybe Worf to a certain degree?
Yeah, sure.
You know, but
it's interesting to me, though, you have, I think Duet is one of the great ones to hold up, is like, we really get to see the best of the Cardassians.
Yes.
Whereas, I don't know if we really get to see the best of the Klingons.
Or the Borg.
Or the Borg, sure. You know, like, Worf is obviously a really cool character, and we like him a lot.
Yeah.
But he feels so removed from the kind of the Klingons.
He doesn't seem like a typical Klingon
no.
either. He's not the Klingons that... He is very obsessed with, being way more Klingon than the average Klingon is when
right.
it comes to honor and all that sort of stuff.
Whereas in DS9, we really get to see humanized portraits of the Cardassians, whether that character from Duet or the character who sort of adopts Kira as, like, his daughter.
Gamor, yeah.
Or, you know, Tora Zial, who's part Cardassian.
And it's interesting to me, it's just even framing the journey of the Cardassians from Kira's point of view, where
right.
Kira hated their guts. She ends up having, like, these Cardassian father figures, like, mm-hmm. Throughout her life, which is very... She's even coming to realize that these are not a one-note antagonistic species, you know? And we keep calling them the antagonists. And here's what I need to bring up is, would you ever suspect that one Damar would be somebody you're cheering for?
Never.
Never. And
yeah.
He's realizing, like, just how screwed up, you know, this war is going, how complicit he is with it all, and he just doesn't have enough, so he starts his own Cardassian rebellion, and of course, Kira has to go and work with this guy, which
right.
Nobody's quite happy with that, but, and it's also that kind of tragic narrative that Will is speaking of. Damar doesn't see, you know, like, this bright new Cardassia. He gets shot trying to break in to that central command base,
right.
you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I don't know, but, like, how was kind of your journey with Damar? Because I had hyped him up to you a lot. And did I overhype him?
You might have overhyped him in the sense that I was constantly waiting for him to do amazing things.
Yeah.
It took a long time for that to happen. But once Casey Biggs gets material to play with,
yeah.
suddenly you're like... Yeah, again, it's another humanized Cardassian that we really get to really see the many layers to them.
Yeah.
These aren't, like, hissing villains. This isn't Krug
right.
in Star Trek III, where you're like, right, okay, he's evil. You know, the Cardassians, even the most evil ones, whether it's Dakot. I mean, okay, take Dakot. How many scenes were he sharing with Kira or Sisko where you're like, I just wish they'd get along?
Yeah.
Because they both are such awesome characters.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's like he's not a boo hiss villain who just comes in and is like, I'm, gonna kill you all sort of thing.
He's like, I'm buying you a dress.
He seems so confused.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of wants redemption, but he's a hateful guy. And you see a lot of that in Damar, too, where you're like, this man shot Tora Zial.
Yes.
But you feel bad for him because he's a drunken idiot.
Yeah.
And... You know, there's obviously so much, like, pain inside of him that's just finding no outlet.
Well, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he discover that they wiped out his entire family?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, just imagine how tortured this dude is. But
yeah.
his performance there, like, he finds this information out. He doesn't turn into a blubbering Picard or anything like that.
These things happen.
Yeah. You know, that's a Generations reference for you guys.
Yeah.
He's just very stoic, and he just understands, well, this is how it works. But he's pissed off. You know that, you know? And, like,
right.
well, I'm sure he's mortified. It's his family that's been killed because of his own decisions, his actions, you know?
Right.
But it's... Going back to that Dukat and on the redemptive arc,
mm-hmm.
you know, he seeks redemption in the Paw Wraiths. He
right.
still thinks that he's going to find some sort of redemption, leaving
yeah.
this kind of Jonestown massacre on Empok Nor
right.
as well. It's just, what a delusional character.
Well, that's the best part, is that ultimately Gul Dukat is insane.
Yes.
You know, he's never going to make the right choice.
How often do you cheer for, like, just nutty, nutty characters that are really, truly delusional?
It's rare, because, you know, you look at the ones who are really great, that people love, like, say, the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You never really root for him.
No. You can cheer for him a little?
You like him because he's cool and you want to see him on screen.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know that he's a horrible human being that you want to see defeated by the end.
But it's interesting that the cop, because he's so insistent that he's not.
Yeah.
And that maybe he was... He keeps arguing, look, I did my best to protect the Bajorans as much as I could during the occupation. I was under so many orders to do this and that. You don't know how many Bajoran lives were saved because of me.
And we don't know whether to believe him.
And it's always kind of murky. Like, it's tough to tell. He can say this, you know, because he wants to be liked, you know. Mm-hmm. But then in an episode like Waltz, we find out that he really does hate Bajorans, you know.
Right.
Like, so
he really, really does.
But maybe that's just such a subconscious thing on his part. Maybe he didn't even realize he hated Bajorans. Maybe he was trying to save these Bajorans as much as he could, even while he was complicit in so much extermination.
Or maybe he just hates them so much because they hate him so much.
Yeah.
It's like all of this sort of internal trauma and wounds he feels are directed from them towards him, so he hates them in return. Like, we just don't know. There's so much ambiguity to this character. There's so much richness to read into him.
Oh, yeah. With him. Maybe he only decided to hate them because no matter what he did, they just hated him so much. So, and maybe take the Kira Dukat relationship as a microcosm of his relationship with the Bajorans. Like, no matter what he does, she just isn't that into him.
Yeah.
You know, which, can you really be shocked?
No.
Yeah.
No, like, from Kira's point of view, no, you would never forgive this man.
Yeah.
Ever. You'd want to see his head on a platter every single time you saw him.
Well, I mean, think about, like, I believe her mother was involved with Dukat's, which mortifying to her.
Right.
I believe her father was killed during the occupation as well. There's
many of her friends.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Kira's carrying a lot of baggage due to the Cardassians.
Mm-hmm.
But here's maybe what we need to get at. The Cardassians, they're portrayed as very antagonistic. But do you think that they represent probably the most accurate mirror for humanity in the ability that they have their dark, horrible side, but they are capable of redemptive arcs? Even with a character as nuanced as, say, Garak, who we haven't really spoken about at length.
No.
But tell me, what do you think, if we hold them up as a mirror to humanity, how do you think they rank relative to other Star Trek species, not necessarily antagonists, but let's say the Vulcans or the Andorians or what have you?
I don't think the Andorians get interesting really until the Enterprise TV show. I think there's cool stuff with them. The Vulcans also, I think, really, depending on who's writing them, they become very uninteresting.
Yeah.
Or they can have really cool stuff.
I mean, T'Pol and Spock, I think, are interesting
for
characters.
For sure, for sure.
Tuvok, not so much.
No.
But even like a character like Saval, Ambassador Saval, he becomes far more interesting by the time you get to season 4.
Right.
He's much less one note.
Right.
Which is...
But again, there's this inconsistent approach to the Vulcans that does not really transpire with the Cardassians.
Well, why do you think that is?
I think it's just the length. I think the key to the Cardassians and their success is that they kind of arrived, you know, sort of mid-TNG and really had their time to shine through DS9. That's a very compact period of time.
Yeah.
It wasn't kind of trying to develop this alien race over 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
30, 40 years. Like, oh, hey, yeah, let's do this with them. Let's do that with them. Like, who knows going forward what will be done with Cardassians? But in the period of time in which they existed, there was a very pure, I think, probably very well laid out vision as to what this alien race was, and it was explored to the fullest depth they could.
Yeah. Would you be down for a Cardassian appearance in the rebooted TOS films, or are you kind of maybe waiting for maybe a jump into the 25th century in another TV series?
It would feel weird to me to see Cardassians with, like, you know, Chris Pine and crew.
Yeah.
Like, they just feel to me like a very... ambiguity and real, like, that sort of shades of gray, not the Riker type, really don't come into play until you get to the 24th century Picard and forward stories. And I just feel like the Cardassians belong in that point in time.
I don't think they would be so well serviced in like one of the rebooted films. Like there'd just be too much. They would just be the one note antagonists, I fear, because they've got a great look.
Yeah.
They're sinister, and you know they get good actors to portray these from like Mark Alamo, Casey Biggs, David Warner, Andrew Robinson.
There has to be something about the Cardassians though that really is like just fodder for actors. Because we've seen a lot of great actors play Klingons or play other alien races and not have this sort of just home run percentage that actors playing Cardassians have.
Yeah, you know, I think there's definitely been success for actors with Romulans as well. And I wonder if it's just because the actors don't have to play dumb to a certain degree.
Right.
They can play smart and intelligent and have more nuances than a guy who's, I don't know, like crushing a bottle of Warnog against his head right. or something, you know?
And they get, like, long soliloquies.
Yes. Right. Oh, they like to talk.
Yes, they do.
Let me ask you this. What would you like to see the Cardassians portrayed as in the 25th century if there's another TV series? Because I'd have to believe after the Dominion War, that society changed a whole lot, you know?
Right.
Like, nearly a billion people dead, their military completely destroyed. Cam, what are your thoughts?
I would love to see a Cardassia that has been just shaken to its foundation and, like, you know, the best of humanity, managed to overcome its problems.
Right, yeah.
And you know, it would be easy to do it like the Germans between World War I and II. Like, coming back, like, now we're the even tougher Cardassia.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. Like, no. I would love to see, you know, your Gul Dukats are gone through means that are questionable. Magic books.
Yeah.
But to kind of let sort of the new voices of Cardassia lead it in a positive direction. Like, it would be interesting to me, like, to have Cardassia becoming sort of like the Klingons with TNG, where maybe we're uneasy with them, but they are interested in working beyond where they once were.
Well, see, I have two thoughts, and one is kind of aligned with maybe what you're saying, is maybe they could be kind of a mere federation, because the Cardassian Union was like a powerful, you know, entity in the Alpha and Beta quadrants. But if they're kind of a mere federation, they've redeemed themselves. I like this redemptive arc that they're on, and they're kind of maybe uneasy allies, so to speak, with the Federation.
Right.
That could be interesting. The other thought I had is,
but, like, I would underline the ally part.
Yeah.
You know, and not, like, make them, like,
I don't want
someone's, like, shifty, like, oh, they're spying on us, or, you know, something like that. I would love it if they were allies.
But what if this, I mean, look at the shape of the Cardassian Union by the end of the Dominion War.
Right.
Wouldn't surprise me if it became kind of like post-war Germany, where, like, maybe it's partitioned, you know, like, bits into, are absorbed by the Romulans, by the Klingons, by the Federation. So maybe Cardassia is kind of the new Berlin, where it's kind of divided up. And
is it going to be like a remake of Cabaret?
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
who's can we? Joel Grey's still alive. Let's bring
that's
him
true.
Back.
That's true. Boothby.
Yeah.
but it'd be interesting if, look, you had a Cardassian serving on a Federation ship, or
right.
We do have the, you know, those Cardassians that are trying to rebuild and reshape themselves, and there's also maybe like a splinter group of Cardassians that were absorbed by the Romulans who are a little bit more similar to the antagonistic ones. You know, it right. doesn't have to be like, sometimes I find the aliens on Star Trek, they're very monolithic. Like, one species represents right. one particular mandate or mission. And I think if we have different kinds of Cardassians representing different things, some want to better themselves, some want to go back to the old ways for different reasons, I think that could be fascinating.
And what about just the Cardassians that, like, you know, looked at their planet and almost like Neelix, after the Cascade,
right.
were like, there's nothing left for me here.
Yeah.
And just, you know, roam the galaxy.
That would be fascinating. Because I think one of the things we need for a next Star Trek series is get away from the usual spots in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah.
I'm not saying go back to the Delta Quadrant, but maybe go to an unexplored corner of the galaxy, and maybe there's Cardassians roaming about there, and maybe a Federation starship or whatever's on a long distance mission, something like that. And if you're encountering Cardassians, or if there's a Cardassian serving on the bridge, I think that would be very interesting. And
I would love to see a Cardassian crew member.
Yeah, I would love to see a Cardassian captain.
Oh,
an Admiral Pressman type, perhaps.
I'm sure there's some fan fiction about that.
I've written it.
Good.
But you know what? I think what we've not addressed here, which I think a lot of listeners are probably pulling their hair out at the moment, waiting for us to get here, is the character of Garak.
Right.
I think he's one of the most fascinating Star Trek characters of all time. And for me, I mean, this is a character that it took me a couple seasons, because I was young when I was watching Deep Space Nine, but it was moments where Garak shot and vaporized a character. I forget the name of the episode. And he says, "Pity, I rather liked him."
Right.
And yeah. I just love that moment so much. That's, I think that was maybe season 2 or 3. And as a kid, I was like, whoa, this guy is, he's not like just this dude who's just chilling, you know, having fun on the station. Like,
yeah.
He is like a scary guy, you know. But he can go ahead and, like, just such a great people, do some messed up stuff. You know, he's done a whole lot of messed up stuff in his past. Yeah. You know, what do you think, where does Garak relate on the list of characters when he is more of that shade of gray for you?
He's sort of an outlier when we're talking about Cardassians.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that he doesn't really represent the Cardassians as a whole too well, but I do think in many ways he represents the best and the worst of them.
Yeah.
With the best, you know, this curiosity, this need to kind of learn and be, you know, well-spoken, intelligent, engage with others. You know, we see that through his conversations with Bashir.
Yeah.
And just his interest in kind of becoming a sort of a member of Deep Space Nine. And, you know, and relating to all of his customers and all that.
But the thing is that he never was really integrated on Deep Space Nine, which I think is great for his character.
Right.
Because it just shows just how this guy's got nothing.
Right.
You know, Zial's died, and that relationship, it always made me question it.
Right.
I thought it was a little creepy, but I think he was just so lonely. Like, he was looking for something to remind him of home. He goes back to Cardassia after the war. It's just disintegrated. Like, he's even saying, like, I just don't know if there's much here left for me, you know? So where does he go? Back to Deep Space Nine, where he never quite fit in?
But you could see that there was, like, almost like an interest in fitting in. He never did.
Yeah.
But, like, he had a certain charisma, and there an interest in, like, engaging people.
Yeah.
Just that there was so much baggage with the Cardassians that was never going to happen.
I do like how Bashir thought he was going to, you know, get some intelligence, you know, like befriend the Cardassian left on the space station.
Right.
That was early Bashir, by the way.
But then representing the worst side, more the snaky, dangerous, violent side, and the amoral side that often we would see with Cardassians.
Would you want to be friends with Garak? Let me ask you that. Because to a certain degree, I would say Bashir is friends with him.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely not super close, but they are friendly. And
right, no, I agree.
Would you want to be friends with Garak? Because would you want that guy, you know, on your side, or would you just never fully trust him?
I would think I would want him on my side.
But would you fully trust him if he was your, quote, friend?
I don't think you could ever fully trust Garak.
Yeah. So that's tough for me. I like him as a character.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I really want to be playing racquetball with him or...
I'd play racquetball with him.
Okay, yeah.
Me and Garak, we'll go party on the racquetball court.
Okay, fair enough. But I don't know, like, let's touch upon, like, some other, like, maybe favorite Garak moments. Mm-hmm. He gets a chance, we've kind of touched upon this, his chance to become integrated in Cardassia once again, like, no longer an exile, is when Enbrun Tain approaches him and says, come join the Obsidian Order Tal Shiar Alliance.
Yeah.
And Garak's like, cool, what do I got to do? Oh, you have to torture Odo.
That's the one I was thinking of, actually. Yeah. That's one of the greats.
How do you come back from that?
He does.
And I think because it's these, for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe I'm just a messed up viewer, but these actors are just too charismatic, whether it's Dukat or Garak, for me to hate them. You know, like,
Andy Robinson is just phenomenal.
I'm so looking forward to seeing him in Vegas. I've never seen him at a convention before, or Mark Alamo.
Right.
So I'm going to have a blast just asking them questions or getting photos with them. But I don't know. Do you think Robinson and Alamo have similar qualities that make them charismatic, or do you think they're charismatic as Cardassians for different reasons?
I think there's... I think it's for different reasons. I think with Garak, it's almost like a childlike inquisitiveness.
Yeah.
He has a very innocent look, which makes everything he does that much more kind of jarring.
Right.
You look at him and he just looks so open and just, he's almost like a dog tilting his head. You know what I mean? Like, I remember there was a moment in Halloween, the original Halloween, where Michael Myers does it. He just kind of turns and tilts his head like a dog.
Yeah.
And there's something endearing about it, because you recognize it as sort of this innocent gesture. And to me, like, Garak has that same thing going on, where it's like, you know he's dangerous, but there's something so just, like, almost like childlike and wondrous about him that you're, like, you're kind of drawn to him.
And I think the key here is, like, maybe he's not so as outwardly slimy as, say, Dukat.
No, there's, like, a really, like... Just, like I said, an innocence to him, to his exterior. Whereas, when we know the truth, you know, it's anything but innocent.
Yeah.
But whereas, like, Dukat is imposing.
Right.
There is, just right up front, he is imposing. There's something about Alamo's eyes and just sort of this dark look in his eyes.
Yeah.
That just says he's trouble.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. I mean, for you, I'm trying to think back when, like, I was really sucked into Dukat as a character that you don't necessarily love to hate, but mm-hmm. it's just, like, someone who I just appreciated as kind of a character. I think it had to be the episode where the space station engages in that Cardassian safety measure in the event of a Bajoran uprising.
Right.
And Dukat appears on the station figuring, oh, I can fix it all just like this.
Right.
And he subsequently gets trapped by this own program that he created as well.
Right.
To me, they just kind of humanized him to a certain degree, made him look like a doofus, but just still made him look like an antagonist because he showed up on the station to just mess with everybody.
How important do you think the role of humor is in getting these characters across? Because,
yeah.
You know, Garak obviously has a lot of funny moments.
But, you know what?
But Dukat does too. Not necessarily like he's being funny.
Right.
But the show is having sort of some humor as
just kind of shaking. The show's shaking its head at him.
Right. So we become sort of more drawn to him just because there is that sort of black humor to his character.
Yeah. But look at a character like, say, Damar, who I don't think is funny at all.
Oh, he's a little funny. He's kind of got a bumbling, sort of drunken
thing.
Like
Weyoun commenting on how much he drinks. Okay,
right,
that's fine.
They do play him as a bit of a bumbling fool.
Yeah.
And there is this sort of low level of humor to him and to Dukat. It's not as pronounced as it is with Garak.
Yeah.
Oh, but to me, that's a big part of it. And when you get to characters like some of the Klingon, that is not as prominent. In a way that feels as attractive.
And would you say the Romulans are funny?
There's
humor associated with them? Yeah.
Not really. But then look at like the sparring sessions between Kira and Dukat.
Oh,
they're
yes.
often very funny.
Yes.
And same with Sisko and Dukat.
Yeah.
Like, we're often laughing. Even though, you know, there's atrocities on both sides. their sparring is so intelligent and fun. That we can't help but like them.
It just reinforces just how delusional, like, Dukat is.
Right.
He genuinely, and here's the key here, is that Mark Alamo plays it as somebody who genuinely sees himself as the good guy in this situation.
Right, which is what any great actor does when they're playing a villain.
Yeah, but I think he just does it to such an amazing degree. It's no wonder why this was the most prolific Star Trek antagonist, you know, mm-hmm. out there. Like, I don't believe there's any other antagonist that appeared in more episodes than one Dukat.
Episodes? No. I mean, I guess you can make the argument for Q as being a prominent antagonist.
He was only in, like, eight
episodes. Yeah, he's
episodes.
Only in, well, and then your Voyager episodes and stuff like that.
I'd say he gets a grand total of
right.
10,
yeah,
12.
Yeah, no, I mean,
Dukat's in, like, I believe, like, 38.
Definitely is more. He's definitely far more prolific,
yeah.
but yeah.
So... Well, Kim, I'm just wondering, do you have any kind of final thoughts on the Cardassians? Any thoughts about why you'd make an argument for them as one of the greater Star Trek aliens?
I think a lot. It's just like, you know, there's some characters that are just a perfect storm of great ideas.
Yeah.
You know, we see it at Darth Vader. The look alone is incredible. But then you toss in all of the elements, you know, with the Cardassians. They look fantastic. They're written with like some of the best writing Star Trek has to offer, because the writers know that if you're going to write an intelligent character, you have to provide them with intelligent dialogue.
Yeah.
They can't be lazy. They can't be like, oh, give them the blood wine, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that.
No, give them the Kanar.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, give them like a villainous Ferengi scene from, you know, season one TNG.
Right.
Like, that stuff doesn't fly if you're writing Cardassian dialogue. And I just think that somewhere along the line, there was a very, I think, conscious decision made to develop the Cardassians to such a deep level that makes them so much more compelling. Like, you know, when we go through episodes like Chain of Command, Duet, Waltz, what have you, there is so much more to chew into on a thematic level, on a symbolic level with the Cardassians than almost any other villain in Star Trek.
Yeah. I guess the last thing I want to mention is that redemptive arc of theirs. I mean, you have Dukat trying to do what he thinks is right for Cardassia when it's kind of, a lot of it's been decimated by the Klingon Empire.
Yeah.
So he gets them to join the Dominion. That doesn't go so well for that.
No.
You know, and it's very interesting how over the course of those 2 years during the war, I mean, everybody realizes, like, okay, there was that scene with Senator Vrenak when he says hi to Sisko and says, hey, it's the man who started the Dominion War.
Right.
Do you really think it's more Dukat has more at fault for this than, say, one Ben Sisko?
That's a good point.
Do you think Dukat's responsible for upwards of more than a billion lives lost?
Probably.
What does that tell you about a guy who's still very, very popular, a character who's very, very popular with the fans, that he probably cost more than a billion lives, like, not necessarily directly, but through his own hubris.
Right. It's very true. I mean, but then look at that moment in this season finale of season 5, where everyone has to leave DS9.
Yeah.
And you have that moment where Dukat comes in and sees the baseball.
Right.
And is looking at it, he's like, it's a message. But he has that kind of that smirk on his face. Like, he's not, you know, it doesn't cut to him, like, screaming, like, Sisko! You know what I mean? It's like, he's just like, you know, well, the game continues.
I think for him, it's all a friendly game of chess.
Right.
I really think that's what it is to him. And obviously, some people like, you know, like, throwing the chessboard in the air.
Right.
At a certain point, but for a long period during that, Dukat's playing like a friendly game of chess, of one-upsmanship, you know, and that's why he doesn't lose his cool really until Waltz.
Right.
You know, he's not one of those yelling, screaming aliens like Duras, you know, so.
Yeah, and, you know, it really, if you, outside of Star Trek, look at the history of the villains that people really love, they're often very smart, articulate characters.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the Joker, whether it's the Emperor, whether it's Blofeld in the Bond films, you know, it goes on and on. Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
They're these cold intellectual types that sound almost reasonable.
Yes. But
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, absolutely. The red cape is coming.
Yeah, Dr. Doom. You know, there's no shortage of them.
Yeah.
Dr. Octopus.
And that's the thing, is like, The yelling, screaming villains like Nero, they're entertaining to a certain degree, but
right.
Would you want Nero as your primary antagonist for 7 seasons?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's as nuanced as these more intelligent. You feel you can have like a legitimate debate with these dudes, you know? It'd be
right.
Very frustrating, but you'd much rather be able to feel as if you can talk sense into them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the end of it, I think a lot of those Cardassians, they had some sense talked into them, you know, so, and I love that redemptive arc to a certain degree.
Right.
So
on that note, I believe our assignment is complete. Now, before we get to contact stuff, I guess we should kind of give a heads up. While you guys are probably listening to this episode, we are in Star Trek Las Vegas.
Yes, we are. Cam, we'll be sitting in seats Q25 and Q26. Listeners, come say hi to Cam and me. But Cam especially, he's really getting sick of my snoring. He's looking for applicants for new roommates for next year in Vegas. So maybe if you make a great impression, you'll hear from us on the show and you'll be selected as Cam's new roommate.
Right, sure. And we would love to debate any of the topics we've discussed on this show, whether it's the film rankings, whether you think Cardassians stink and you want to tell us why.
Yeah, really.
You know, let us know. But you know what? If you aren't going to be in Star Trek Las Vegas, send us a voicemail or an email to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on the Cardassians or anything to do with our previous episodes. Love to hear from you. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Von Armstrong played a Cardassian Smith.
Wow. You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nor, comma, Tarok.
So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.